IVM.
Welcome to episode 97 of the Edges and Sledges Cricket Podcast. It has been an exciting week in the world of cricket. Lots going on. India's in New Zealand. The India women are in Australia. The Under-19 World Cup's going on, so there's plenty to cover. We will jump right into pretty much all of it. I'm your host this week, Ashwin. I'm in Cincinnati. Joining me is Varun in Singapore. And we hope DJ, who's currently in India, because his connection seems to be a little bit spotty, so we're going to do our best. But if you don't hear from DJ for a little bit, know that we tried and weren't able to get to him. So, Varun, let me start with you. Busy week of cricket, despite only being two India men's games. How are you feeling?
Yeah, feeling good, actually. I mean, yeah, we'll talk about India-New Zealand scoreline, but ended the week on a high and right now not feeling that great.
Yeah, absolutely right. So obviously what he's referring to is winning the T20 series 5-0 and then starting a three-match ODI series and it just coming up short and with India all losing their series. So 2-0 down already with one match to go, but that means the series is over. This is India's first series loss since the Cricket World Cup 2019. It's unbelievable, right? I mean, we've won three series in a row. We won three ODI series. What happened here? First match, we batted, made 347. Second match, we managed to restrict them to 273 and then couldn't chase it down. So is something wrong with the Indian setup or should we just not be overreacting, Varun?
Actually, firstly, I didn't realize that this was our first series loss after the World Cup. I mean, when you put it like that, yeah, it's a pretty big moment for us. But especially having said that India had only 30 bad minutes of cricket in 2019. So I think it's something that from an ODI perspective, I don't know whether India is focused enough on ODI given we have a T20 World Cup this year, or it's just down to the fact that we had a different 11 playing, right? And Ashwin, we'll talk through it, but our openers weren't there. You had Shaw and Mayank both debuting in the ODI space. You still had people like Kedar, Shardul. So I feel like this wasn't our top strength team, but at the same time, being 2-0 down in a three-match series is not acceptable.
Yeah, I think well said. And I guess my only question to you before we really deep dive is, are you worried or is two matches just two matches and it's away from home and it wasn't our top team? And on a scale of 1 to 10, how worried are you, 10 being the most?
No, I'm not worried. I'm probably at 5 right now. I'm not worried at all. And as we get into that a little bit more, I'm very happy with our number 4 and 5. So as we talk more about that, I'll tell you why, but I'm not worried at all.
Very clear. Very good point of view. And I echo that completely. I think Kohli has pretty much come out and said this is a non-World Cup year for ODI. We're 3.5 years away from the next ODI World Cup. We're focused on T20s. We won the T20 series 5-0. We're experimenting a little. DJ, let's assume I got you back. Let's talk a little bit about the opening pair. So Rohit and Dhawan have opened for India for so many years now. One of the top opening pairs, not just playing the game today, but in the history of the ODI game. Suddenly you have both Mayank and Shaw walking out, both young, both very talented, both have played test cricket, but both making ODI debuts. What is your reaction to the new opening pair and both the young guys?
Prithvi Shaw, of course, looked really good even in the test arena. He looked really good. He kind of is, he bases himself a little bit, I think, around Virender Sehwag, C-ball, hit-ball, and he went off like a rocket in the second ODI as well. But it is strange. It is something that... I mean, they had a nice little partnership in the first ODI. They got 50 on the board, Mayank and Prithvi, before Prithvi got out. And in the second ODI, they went off like an absolute rocket as well before Mayank got out. But I think maybe Shaw got out first. But it is odd not seeing Rohit and Dhawan at the top of that order. I mean, we've seen it for so many years. We've seen Rahul come in a little bit there as well. But not having those two stalwarts for India is a bit... It's a bit unnerving almost. And in some ways, it's just like, where is that opening partnership going? I mean, is Prithvi or Mayank going to play the T20 World Cup or the 2023 World Cup as an opening batsman? I don't think that's the case. So definitely a stopgap arrangement from my perspective at this point.
Yeah, I think absolutely fair. I think that's part of the reason why Varun very clearly said not super worried. But they didn't look bad, right? They came out to bat the first of the three ODIs. They put up 50 runs before Shaw got dismissed. Obviously, Mayank got dismissed 4 balls later. So that's never ideal. But Varun, let's double click a little more on the first ODI before we talk more details. Kohli walks in at 3. Iyer walks in at 4 right after that. And they put on this magnificent, call it 102-run partnership. And then Iyer keeps going. And Rahul comes in, makes 88 of 64 balls. Shreyas Iyer gets to an ODI century. 347. I mean, the matches start at 9 p.m. my time. And after the first ODI, I went to bed thinking, this is a done deal, right? 347 at Hamilton felt pretty rock solid.
Yeah, I think anywhere in the world, chasing 7 per over is pretty much the first team, the batting team's game, right? The guy who set the score. But I think, okay, let's talk about the New Zealand performance later. But I think India, like DJ said, started off well. I think what I really liked is Iyer and Rahul are our number 4 and 5, and it seems very clear that this is going to be the number 4 and 5 for the future. I personally am very happy that they were not tempted to put Rahul up at the top when both Rohit and Dhawan are not playing, because I think that seemed to be the obvious move and a lot of people were shocked with that. But given the pipeline of talent we have at the end, you know that you've got Shaw, Agarwal, all these guys just waiting, and Rohit Dhawan are not going anywhere. So, firstly, I'm really happy with the middle order. Second, I think Iyer was just brilliant, right? 103 of 107. And he hit, what I found really interesting was he hit much more boundaries. And I think that's classic number 4, right? He hit 11 boundaries. And then you had Rahul who come in and he was hitting more sixes, which is great from India's perspective for a number 5 batsman. So overall, I was really happy. Ashwin, I think that was around the time you probably went to sleep. After that, I don't know what happened, man. It's like India just kind of, within 48 overs, they chased it. Ross Taylor played an absolute...
Hold on, Varun, can I interrupt you for a second?
Yeah.
You skipped a step. You went from number 4 and 5, and you went straight into the New Zealand chase. But there was a man who came in right after and made 26 of 15 balls, which is striking at 173. Hit some big fours and a six, three big fours and a six. I mean, 26 of 15, not out. You can't really complain, right? You want to talk about that quickly?
Yeah, so my friend Pod sent me a stat the other day, and he said Kedar Yadav is probably India's best number 6 batsman on paper. So that's why I skipped it, because I feel like he's going to be around for a while. I don't know why. It's the only unhappy thing about the entire ODI setup that I am. It's the only thing I'm unhappy about the ODI setup. But you can't blame him. He's doing his job, right? He does it every time.
Yeah, fair enough. So we'll come to New Zealand. DJ, I want to ask you, I think Varun hit on something interesting there, which is we may have been tempted to play Rahul up the order. We weren't. We decided to go keep him at number 5 and just, you know, get back the... back the middle order, back the 3-4-5 and establish those guys. You've been an advocate, DJ, of Pant going up the order. Obviously, Varun mentioned some other names that are in the pipeline waiting. Do you agree that Rahul at 5 was the right call?
I'd say it's a more consistent call for him because he's opening in T20s. He opened in the last ODI we played, I think, because of injury, if I'm not wrong. But he isn't going to bat up the order in ODIs, and that seems to be the message because he's succeeding in the middle of the order. He's scoring runs there. So I wasn't terribly surprised. I think they'd come out and said that he won't be opening the batting before the game. So not a bad call. I mean, it's just defining a player's role, right? And I think Rahul's been suffering a little bit of late because of that. He's a wicketkeeper batsman one day, batting at 3, batting at 1, batting at 5. So he's been shuffled around. But if you tell him this is going to be your role, it gives him a little bit of understanding of what his role is going to be. Because one day he's talking about speaking to middle-order batsmen and improving his ODI game. The next day he's back at the top of the order. So maybe from the player's perspective, it's good for him to understand what his role is going to be. But equally, you must balance that with flexibility. So I don't have a problem with him batting at 5 in ODIs. And he knows he's going to bat there.
Right. I think well said. And I think I agree with both of you. It's tough. And knowing the way the life of an Indian fan and Indian supporter goes, we'll probably be saying the opposite in 1, 2, or 3 months. But for now, I think the right thing to persist. So Varun, before I cut you off, you were saying New Zealand innings. I mean, they chased down 347 and didn't look like they, or 348 and didn't look like they missed a beat.
Yeah, it didn't at all, actually. In fact, Williamson wasn't playing and they still managed to chase it down with 2 overs to go. So they went at a run rate of above 7 consistently. Guptill and Nichols got them off to a great start. Taylor was the guy for me. He hit 109. And apparently in these big chases, I saw some Cricinfo post online that said, I think in the last few years, he's done this 6 times in big 350-odd run chases. So he really stepped up as a senior most player. And of course, step-in captain Tom Latham, 69 of 48, really also kind of came to the party. So it was a great chase. I couldn't believe what was happening, especially after a 5-0 loss in the T20s. I was like, which New Zealand side turned up for this?
Yeah, absolutely. I think well said. So before we move on to the second ODI and then talk overall themes, I want to talk a little bit about the bowling. DJ, let me start. Let me come to you. They went with Kuldeep and Jadeja as the two spinners for the first ODI. Kuldeep picked up 2 wickets, which is 2 of the only 4 wickets that were taken by bowlers. but he went for 84 runs. And then from a seamer standpoint, they went with Bumrah, Shami, and Shardul. It seems like they're trying to stay fairly consistent with that. Bumrah was the most economical, even though he gave 53 runs. So not great, but the most economical of all five bowlers. And then you had Shardul, who took a wicket, but went for 80 runs in his nine overs at an economy rate of 8.89. I mean, how does this happen when you have so many runs, when you have 347 to defend? So what do you think went wrong with the bowling in the first ODI?
I think we were doing okay until we dropped Ross Taylor, right, of Kuldeep. We went up and Kuldeep actually dropped the catch of Jadeja, I think. So again, it was a little bit of poor out cricket. It was a little bit of poor fielding that ended up in a loss. I mean, those chances, they come along, and top class players, if you don't catch them, and Ross Taylor, make no mistake, is a top class player. And he was hurting after that 5-0 loss in the T20 series. I think he went on record saying that we used to treat them as warm-ups to the ODIs, but obviously they're not anymore, 5-0 hurts and stuff. So great innings from him in the first ODI to pull out that 100. And of course, if we dismissed him early on, it may have been a totally different story. So, I mean, Bumrah, I'm sure we'll talk more about him later in the show. He's a class act, just not having the best time of late. Shardul, we know what you think of him. He had a pretty horrendous day with the ball, so to speak. Kuldeep went for a lot of runs as well. Jadeja as well, after that drop catch, went the distance with Ross Taylor kind of taking him apart in pieces. Not a great day for the Indian bowling, allowing 347 to be chased down.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. So obviously not a great first ODI, but it's not the first time India's fallen behind in a series. Probably won't be the last. I think we still backed India to come good in the second ODI. So going in the second ODI, at Eden Park, where they played some T20s as well, Kohli actually won the toss this time, having lost it the first time, and said he's going to chase, which India is known to be better at doing. And New Zealand walks up to bat, gets off to an absolute flyer thanks to Guptill and Nichols. But I think the bowlers did a pretty good job pegging us back. So Varun, I don't know if you got to watch the second ODI New Zealand batting innings, but Yuzvendra Chahal picked up 3 for 58. Shardul bounced back a little bit, arguably, picked up 2 wickets for 60 runs in his 10 overs. And I mean, you would take 273 any day of the week at Eden Park, right?
Yeah, any day of the week and twice on Sundays. I mean, 273 at chasing under 5.5. I thought this was India's game. You know, DJ said Shardul bowled really bad. He came back well. I mean, I'm not in favor of him playing, but he came back well. Bumrah had the same story. Economy rate around 6, which was actually higher than the average, but went wicketless again, which I'm just amazed at, right? Seni bowled well. Chahal, of course, is the difference. And to me, I would play Chahal over Kuldeep any day. And lastly, Jadeja has to play for me. I mean, the economy rate 3.5. He was the real standout performance, right? He's probably the reason that New Zealand did not get to 300. So from a bowling perspective, yes. I mean, disappointed with Bumrah. Very happy with Chahal. Jadeja has to play.
So the one name Varun didn't talk much about is Saini. DJ, let me ask you. I know you're a big Saini fan. He went only for 48 in his 10 overs, so not bad. And he didn't take a wicket, unfortunately. But let me ask you about selection. Do you think it's odd that they said they're now resting Shami to keep him, you know, in good health and fitness for the 3 tests coming up? Which, if that was the case, why did you play him for 1 standalone ODI? And then second off, with Kuldeep taking two wickets but giving more than 80 runs, is it fair for him to have been dropped after 1 ODI to make way for Chahal?
I mean, selection deserves an entire hour by itself. I mean, why we played Rohit in that inconsequential 50-20 when you had someone like Pant waiting in the wings and ruling Rohit out for the rest of the New Zealand tour, which would have really been a test of his mettle in the test series, particularly as an opener. I mean, there's so many questions around selection, right? Fitness, Bumrah had a scare. Ishant has had an ankle injury. Saini has had injuries. Deepak Chahar was injured. You even got Rohit is now sitting out. And I mean, Kulcha, what happened to both our spinners? Now we have a theory that we have to play Jadeja. So a lot of these games, we previously used to manage to come back into the game where Kuldeep and Chahal both took wickets. Jadeja, yes, he adds that with the bat, but that attacking wrist spin option is no longer there. So, I mean, are we never going to play the 2 wrist spinners again? I don't know. So, I mean, it's tough, right? Shami sitting out as well. The Shastri Kohli selection dilemma, I don't know whether there's any science behind their rotation. I'm not raising an alarm, but I'm just like, some of these decisions don't make sense. I mean, yes, you rested Rohit in one game, you rested Kohli in one game, Why did Rohit have to come back for that game? You won the series. It's totally inconsequential. And he hurts his shoulder and he's gone. I mean, amazing. I find it frankly amazing. So selection, I don't know the answer to that, Ashwin, to be totally honest.
Yeah, I think, well said, that's always a fun rant to have to go through. And I think we all feel it, not just Varun and I, but every Indian fan. But Varun, let me just quickly ask you one thing DJ mentioned before we talk about the second innings. But Jadeja obviously contributed with the bat as well. But, you know, you mentioned one for 35 in 10 overs. Absolutely fantastic. Kept it tight. But there is an element to the fact that Jadeja's presence and his ability with the bat has kept us out of being able to play the Kulcha, quote-unquote, pair, Kuldeep and Chahal. Would you like to see Kuldeep and Chahal bowling again together? And do you see that happening away from India?
So I was always 50-50 on Jadeja up to a few months ago. And now I'm just 100% convinced that he has to play in the team, right? I think his bowling, his batting, there's no doubt. I think where India will struggle is when Pandya comes back. Does India go with Pandya and Jadeja as your number 6 and 7? Or do you play an extra batsman? And I think that's where the struggle will come. I think personally, I don't see Kuldeep and Chahal playing together in the same 11 for a long time. But I think they'll both be part of the squads, especially as we think about Australia coming up. And we've already spoken about large grounds. But I still think it's tough to see them both playing in the same 11.
Yeah, very interesting. I think definitely disappointing that we may not see them again. But I think you articulated it pretty well. And I think, I mean, the problem with Jadeja has always been he's just good enough at bowling, just good enough at batting, just good enough at fielding. And so the question becomes, does the sum of those three add value? And I've said yes since day one, and I think it does, but we need to hope he keeps stepping up. Right, DJ, before we wrap up on this ODI, let me ask you quickly the question I asked Varun earlier, which is about Kedar Jadhav. You know, performed well in the first ODI, did not perform much in the second ODI, but arguably, I guess, point blank, the question is he India's best player to play at number six? And if not, is he in there just because he can offer a bowling backup? Because you played him for two ODIs and didn't give him a single over. So how do you think the management thinks about that?
So I think the question, and I'm going to put words into your mouth, is he your best number six now? Or are you looking to 2023, which is the ODI, next ODI World Cup? He's not in the T20 squad. And I think the answer to your question is, yes, he is our best number six now. In the batting, he does just enough. He's okay in the field. He offers an option with the ball. But my question is this, right? I mean, he is going to be, I don't know, Varun, did you say he was going to be 38 by 2023?
I think 38.
Yeah, so he's going to be 38 by 2023. It's not like he's a very fit guy, right? He's had hamstring problems. He's had all of these issues previously. If he was a fit guy, and you would say, yes, he's definitely playing 2023 because he's fit enough to do that, then I probably would not have an issue with his selection at the moment. Particularly, he provides that round arm rubbish, which is used to be seen as variety golden arm stuff. But if you're not even doing that, are there better options in that spot? I think Manish Pandey is pressing a very strong case through the T20 setup, ironically. And I think ODI would probably be a stronger suit for him to play. So I think he's going to come under pressure from Manish Pandey, particularly Shubman Gill in the India A setup is scoring 100 after 100. He's also in the test squad. So I think he is going to start coming under pressure from pure batsmen because he isn't being given enough of a bowl at the moment. And so by 2023, I suspect he would be sitting out. But for reasons, as you've said, he's very good on paper. His stats are excellent. He is at the moment our best number six option. And when he starts failing and India starts losing, like they've lost their first series since the World Cup, his spot is going to come under increased scrutiny, although he may not have done too much wrong.
I don't care to rebut or respond.
Firstly, I think DJ round arm rubbish is just fantastic.
Yeah, can we trademark that?
Great. I'm sure there are others in India who can bowl round arm rubbish. And the second is, Kedar Jadhav actually on Insta, I've been seeing, is hanging out with Salman Khan, who, as you know, is getting fitter by the day and he's 50 plus. So maybe 2027 is not out of the question.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, there was that picture. There was a picture, I think, from the CSK dressing room where Kedar was shirtless and everybody was blown away by the fact that he actually has a six-pack or an eight-pack. Anyway, obviously having the high-quality discussion that you come to expect from Edges and Sledges. Right, so quickly on the India chase, you know, Shaw and Mayank again didn't really come good. Iyer had a great outing, I think, 52. The ideal in that situation from your number four is that he takes it home or pushes at least a little bit further than he did. But I mean, Mayank made single digit, Rahul made single digit, Jadhav made single digit. He actually made 9 of 27. So he tried the Dhoni model, if you will, to just stay out there as long as he could, take the match deep. And then Jadeja came out, made 55 of 73. Shardul, who we've all come to expect big things from, made 18, which is fine, but not great. But Varun, I want to ask you, Navdeep Saini comes out. None of us really, at least I hadn't really heard a sufficient amount or anything about his batting ability. And he comes out, makes actually what is a fantastic 45 of 49. And, you know, didn't take us home, but looked like he could. So was that a huge surprise for you from Navdeep Saini?
Yeah, it was an incredible surprise. As I was watching it, I was just shocked. And you could see even Kohli when he was watching some of those shots. I mean, this guy was slapping the ball for six. And Kohli was, you know, just ecstatic. But at the same time, every ball that he hit, you knew that the next ball he's going to do the same thing and he's going to get out. And I remember watching it and just watching him get bowled and just feeling disappointed. And what was actually interesting is Jadeja actually then fell to the floor and looked extremely disappointed, because I think he knew that there's Chahal and Bumrah to follow. And that was really tough.
Yeah, it was very interesting watching Jadeja's reaction, actually. I think it's interesting to think about the fact that Jadeja wasn't trying to farm strike. So before we wrap up this match, DJ, let me quickly ask you, do you think Jadeja should have been a more responsible, quote-unquote, senior batsman and tried to farm the strike just enough that he's protecting the other guys? Or do you think he, you know, 55 of 73, he did well, but the top orders who failed us?
It's tough, isn't it? I mean, the top order did fail. Jadeja did play a good innings. And he got out trying to take us over the line. So, I mean, you can't blame him, really. Saini stuck around with him. I'm not sure we're going to see a repeat performance from Saini anytime soon. I don't think he's a Deepak Chahar or a Shardul Thakur, a guy who can bat a little bit. I think he got a bit lucky. He didn't look like someone who can really bat. I think he averages about 12 in first-class cricket. The thing with Jadeja, right, and we all love his celebrations and his sword celebration and his Rajput traditional sword fighting celebration. I'm just like, dude, you're about to win the match for your country. Just focus on that for some time. I mean, getting a 50 is not the end goal. Similarly, I was watching the Cricket World Cup semi-final highlights. And he gets his 50 there and he does a celebration and he looks to the press box and stuff. I'm just like, dude, just focus on it. Just do all of this after the game. So maybe there's a little bit of immaturity that creeps into him. I mean, he has been playing cricket for a really long time. I'd like to see him play the role of a more senior statesman in some ways and try and control his emotions on the field a little bit. But maybe that's just him. Maybe that's what makes him tick. Who knows?
Yeah, it sounds like he does seem more interested in one-upping Sanjay Banjrekar and press. And Varun, anything to add?
No, Ash, I was going to say the thing with Jadeja is I think he's so good, but I can't remember the last time he really got India across the line. And I think that's what is going to be the biggest, not question, but it's going to be around India's tactic of, do you actually get another batsman or do you play another bowler? Because between Pandya and Jadeja, you have two all-rounders, but are both of them capable of getting you across the line? And they bat at such crucial positions.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. DJ, I'm going to give you one final chance to respond to that if you have anything to say.
The thing with Jadeja actually is that he's playing these knocks in a losing cause, as Varun's just rightly pointed out. I can remember one T20 that he scored 15 or maybe 30 odd in which he took us across the line. But are we giving up genuine match-winning specialists for someone who can add 40 runs in a losing cause when the top order has not done their job? That is the question that the team management, being Kohli, Rohit and Shastri, need to answer with Jadeja. And that will turn on whether he plays at the 11
right
going forward.
Okay, so Varun, last question for you before we take a break. What is going on with these bowlers who are trying to bat, right? So if you think about it, Kohli came out in the press, said, we're going to back bowlers who, at least in the T20 format, we're going to back bowlers who can bat a little bit so that your number 8, maybe even your number 9, give you some additional options. And so Shardul has showed that he knows how to bat. Chahar, as DJ mentioned, and now Saini. I'm assuming we're going to see more of this, but why is it that there's so much pressure on these guys and not really in reverse, right? Why do we not have batsmen who need to learn how to bowl 2 to 4 overs to give some backup options?
Yeah, it's really sad, actually. I think it's a bit unfair for these bowlers who have to, at number 9, come out and hit 45 or 49 balls. But at the same time, you not have a single batsman in your top 5 or 6 who can bowl. I think what's happened is India historically has never had that problem, right? You've had Sehwag, you've had Sachin, you've had Ganguly. All of these guys can bowl, and Yuvraj, they can bowl more than 10 overs. I remember games where these guys were bowling more than they were required to. But today it's become such a challenge. And I think Kohli and Shastri need to put a little bit of pressure to find somebody who can bat in the top five or six and do that. Now, granted, Pandya is that answer. But again, it's not good enough because you're having to play mediocre people because you don't have that option.
Was mediocre people in reference to Jadhav?
Yeah, 100%. And Shardul.
Just making sure. Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, if Shardul's in the team for his batting. Anyway, I think we've talked about it a lot. My point of view is out there. I nothing but respect for the guy. Very talented cricketer, but doesn't fit into this India setup for me. So that brings us to a wrap of the first half. India trails New Zealand 0-2. Hopefully by the time we're talking to you next week, we are at 2-1 at least and saved a little bit of pride, but then we'll get straight into test match mode and be excited to talk about India's fast bowling attack and away conditions. So with that, we're going to take a quick break. We will be back on the other side of this to talk more about other happenings in the world of cricket.
Have you ever wondered where the business world is headed? How the ways in which we create, market, and sell to consumers will evolve? Or if we'll ever go back to wearing pants while working? For answers to all of this and more, tune into Advertising is Dead with me, Varun Dugirala. Every Tuesday, as I talk to entrepreneurs, leaders, and change makers from across business, media, marketing, and beyond. You can catch all episodes of Advertising is Dead on the IBM Podcast website, app, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Welcome back to the Edges and Sledges Cricket Podcast. So we obviously talked a lot about India, New Zealand, but there's lots else going on. I'm going to start with the India Women's Tri-Series that's going on because right after the day after we released this, India plays the final against Australia. So pretty fascinating series. For those of you who've been following it closely, you'll know better than I that all three teams in the Tri-Series, so it's a Tri-Series between India, Australia, and England. That's kind of a lead up to the World Cup that kicks off in just about 10 days on February 20th. But all three teams at the end of their group stage were tied at 4 points. In an exciting final group match, Australia was playing against England. And if England won, the math would have all changed. But actually, they didn't even need to win. The England women only needed to get 124 runs, chasing 133. And they fell short by 16 runs of the total and 8 runs of what was needed. So net, they made 116. They were 8 runs away from qualifying for the final. And thanks to net run rate, with all three teams being tied, India now faces off against Australia in the final. So I just wanted to make sure we address that. We are so excited. I think, DJ, I don't know if you've had a chance to watch or follow any of this, but I mean, from my vantage point, one of the best chances we might have going into the World Cup. Do you think that's fair?
Yeah, I've been following a little bit of it. I mean, there's been a few things going on. We had the bushfire match, the bushfire benefit match, and we had the Indian women game. So there's a lot of cricket ongoing. So I've been watching kind of highlights of the women's games as well. And Shefali Verma has really impressed me, actually. She's really like quite a big hitter. Of course, Jemima Rodriguez has played really nicely as well. Smriti Mandhana as well. So hopefully our girls and our women will win this final and set it all up nicely for the T20 Women's World Cup that is starting later this month. So really excited for that as well.
Yeah, well said. So, you know, just quick highlights of what's happened in the Tri-Series so far. Smriti and Shefali have been the standout batters. And then from a bowling standpoint, a bowler who I didn't know much about, but Rajeshwari Gayakwad, who, you know, has played a reasonable amount of cricket so far, but is at the top with 8 wickets so far from 4 matches at the top of the wicket takers list for the entire series. So really excited. The final for that series is Tuesday. And what I think is really cool is the India-Australia match is going to be repeated as the opener of the Women's T20 World Cup. So we'll talk more about that next week as we preview the World Cup in its entirety, but really exciting. Let's be cheering on our Indian women's team and hope they can get some success in the Tri-Series because it would be fantastic for momentum going into the World Cup. Right. DJ, you kind of mentioned this, but the other match that's been going on the other extreme of competitiveness and excitement is the Bushfire Bash. So an outstanding initiative. A lot of different former players have got together and, you know, are basically playing a charity match to try to raise funds for the victims of the Australian wildfire crisis, the bushfire crisis. So, Varun, did you get to follow that at all, or was it an awkward time?
I was following it a little bit. I didn't get to watch too much, but I did watch a little bit of kind of Ponting and Lara bat, and it was fantastic to watch all the greats come out and play. Of course, a great cause, over $7.7 million raised. for the bushfire. And I think it was great. I mean, for it to end up with Ponting's 11 winning by one run was just, it was just fantastic.
Yeah, really, really well said. So Ponting's 11 took on Gilchrist's 11. I mean, it was just incredible to see a couple of things. One, Lara and Ponting were both on complete fire. I've never seen, I mean, it's been a long time since I see that, but I would never have expected, rather, to see both Brian Lara and Ricky Ponting bat as well as they did. And then the Gilchrist 11 fell short by one run at the end in a chase. But again, obviously, it was all for fun. It was very entertaining. Courtney Walsh early on when he was bowling, bowled, you know, the ball slipped out of his hand and went way into the leg slip region, and Ricky Ponting chased the ball, and they were just having fun. They were talking. I mean, amazing to see some of the legends of the game that we grew up watching play together. Brett Lee picked up two fantastic wickets. I think he could still be playing international cricket. But then, Varun, the highlight for me was, I think they had set up something where they said by the end of the first innings, if they've raised over $1 million, then Sachin, who was not playing but who was coaching one of the teams, would go out and face an over against Elise Perry. Did you get to see that or watch that or read about that at least?
Yeah, I saw that. It was just great. I think firstly we read about it where she said, I'd love to bowl an over at you. And then he came out and said, even though my doctor has advised me not to because of my shoulder, I'd love to do it. And I think that was fantastic. And just watching him take that batting stance and bowling, and it was great. He had a leg glance that actually went to the boundary. He had a straight drive. He had a cover drive. It was fantastic to watch. It, I have to admit, it was odd to watch him in yellow and green, and the baggy green. But apart from that, it was just great.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. DJ, did you watch Sachin batting at all? I mean, did you think you'd be watching Sachin batting against Elise Perry down under? And how great was that?
I mean, you know that Elise Perry is one of my favorite cricketers in the world, right? She's just a fantastic ambassador for the game. And it was, of course, it's Sachin, right? So it was like almost a dream come true. But what I really enjoyed, actually, was the Master Blaster batting so carefully. It was probably, it was the one over that he was acting quite casual about it and stuff. He said, I borrowed a bat, I put some grips on it, I've done all of this, I've got an injury in my shoulder. But I mean, he did, Varun mentioned he hit a boundary, but it was off a misfield. And I was hoping for a bouncer first. I mean, that would have been proper aggression from Elise. But I mean, really good to see so much money being raised for a very worthy cause. Good to see Sachin walk out and bat and support the cause as well. Of course, I would have liked to see one go to the boundary through the covers or straight drive would have been very nice. He looked like he was enjoying himself out there. The umpire almost had to drag him off after his six balls. But yeah, I mean, as Varun said, him just taking that stance, tapping his bat twice, lifting it up, looking up, having a little nod at the bowler, a little bend of the knees. I mean, just so many memories came flooding back over the years. So I think I'll be spending some time on YouTube going through some old videos today, just nostalgia.
DJ, a boundary is a boundary, man. When he was playing, misfields also counted for four.
Yeah, I know. That's how you got 227, no? In the backyard? Edges and sledges. That's why.
Mostly sixes, so there was no scope for misfields.
I mean, I think if there's one thing you articulated really well, it's the fact that if there was nothing else in this match of legends and retired players, there was plenty of edges going to the boundary and there was plenty of sledging on the field. I think Matty Hayden took the brunt of the sledging, which was just fantastic to see, but couldn't agree more on Sachin. I have to give kudos to the marketing team and the team that organized that. I mean, they knew even if it was just six balls, we would be so excited, all of us Indian fans. And so, I mean, people were tuned in. Sony was actually airing the match live. So really well done by saying, hey, if we hit a certain dollar amount, we'll get Sachin to face an over. All right, guys. At the time of recording this, all three of us are recording while I'm pretty sure our TV screens are on in the background because of time zones, we have to record this while the second innings of the final of the under-19 Cricket World Cup is on. So I'm going to talk a little about the World Cup as a whole, and then we'll see what the status is of the game by the time we release. But obviously, by the time you're listening to this, you'll know what happened, which is great because we don't right now. But India versus Bangladesh in the final. Varun, I know you said you were watching a little bit of India matches before, but I think there have been sort of three standout players for me from an India under-19 standpoint. The first, obviously, Yashasvi Jaiswal, averages over 150 in the tournament. And then with the ball, Karthik Tyagi has been good and Ravi Bishnoi, the leg spinner, has been good. But have you had any favorite moments or anything you were excited to see from this team, India being the only team to have won the under-19 World Cup four times before?
Actually, yeah, for me, it's Jaiswal and Bishnoi. Like, and Jaiswal especially, I watched him hit that 100 And it was fantastic. And I think I'm very happy because I think he's going to leave here as the highest run scorer. And his dad promised to buy him a car if he came home as the highest run scorer. So that was great. And then today, as he was watching the Indian bowling, right, in the second innings, Ravi Bishnoi was just fantastic. I think he's taken 4 wickets, if I'm not mistaken, and each of those wickets was just quality bowling.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't believe in an ODI, you had a almost test match type field, you had short legs, silly point, gully, 2 slips, all crowding around the bat, and he was just bowling magnificent googlies. So couldn't be more happy. DJ, Under-19 Cricket World Cup, Kohli has led this side before. Priyam Garg is now leading the side here. I mean, we hope they win, but even if they don't, how do you think about the future some of these guys have in the next few years while you have this massive pipeline of players still waiting on the sidelines? Is it going to be a while till we see any of these names in the national or the national men's setup?
I think some of them have already got IPL contracts. If I'm not wrong, Yashasvi Jaiswal was picked up by the Mumbai Indians for 2.4 crores. So I think he might be buying himself a car pretty soon as well. So yeah, Yashasvi is looking good. Ravi Bishnoi, I think you said, was for the Kings 11 Punjab. And now the strange way people make their way into the national setup, some of them come through the Under-19 route, then the IPL, someone perhaps like Pant. Or you could have people who go through the India A route, someone like Mayank, who actually performed at the Ranji level as well as India A route. So I think what will be important for these boys going forward is to get into either of those two teams, being the IPL teams and do well there, or the India A team and do well there, because those are really the feeders for the Indian senior national men's team. And so it's important for them to think about their next step. Of course, it's been a fantastic run for these boys. They've had 11 games undefeated as Team India. They beat Pakistan in a tense semi-final. I mean, they beat them easily, but of course, there was all the external stuff which they managed to block out and win very easily. And this final as well, I mean, they looked like they were dominating it to start with. There was a bit of a collapse. But they've not gone down without a fight. I mean, the Bangladeshis have come out hard. And I mean, it's the pressure of a final, man. There's 46 runs to get, 4 wickets left. Their opening batsman is still out there, Imon. I think his wicket's going to turn it. So I'm still quietly hoping our boys manage to pull this one across the line. Because, I mean, it's not been a great week to be an Indian fan, to tell you the truth. And hoping it ends on a positive note with our Indian Under-19 team actually bringing home the World Cup. So fingers crossed.
100% agree. I think reigning champions, the only thing I will say, just being the fan that we are and that I am, is, you know, even if Bangladesh takes this one home, which again, by the time you listening to this, you know what happened. But I still think unbelievable series for the Indian Under-19 boys. They did a fantastic job, represented the country well, you know. There's some fiery moments on the field. There's lots of back and forth banter, lots of sledging, which we love. But, you know, incredibly high amounts of passion to play for their country. Very, very talented boys. So even if they end up second best, really proud of them. Absolutely great run. Like you said, at the time of recording this, Bangladesh now needs 38 runs, 4 wickets in hand. Imon is out there. He retired hurt with cramps, has come back and is basically limping to every single run. But he's out there fighting, and that's the nature of finals. You don't want to leave anything behind. So that brings us to a wrap, guys. Lots to cover. Lots we covered. Lots happening in the world of cricket. By the time we meet next, the India-New Zealand third ODI will be done. Like I said, hopefully it'll be a better result than 3-0. It'll be 2-1. And then we'll be able to preview both the Women's World Cup and the first test match of 2 test matches right next week when we come back. So thank you as always for joining us. We appreciate all the loyal listeners of the Edges and Sledges Cricket Podcast. You can find us on all social media at One Tip One Hand. That's Twitter, Facebook, Instagram at One Tip One Hand, or at any time email us contact@onetiponehand.com. We're all excited to watch the next kind of 15, 20, 30 minutes of the Under-19 World Cup match, and we will be back with you in about a week's time. Thanks so much.
Hello, 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 everybody. It's been another great week on the IVM Podcast Network. On What the Hell Navya, Jaya Bachchan, Shweta Nanda, and Navya herself dish out stories from their childhood. They discuss tough love between parents and their kids. On Paisa Vaisa, Anupam talks to Baman Irani, President-elect Credai, and Chairman and MD at Rustamji. They discuss the concept of buy versus rent and how to approach buying property in 2022. On Cock and Bull, Cyrus is joined by Meghnad and comedian Shahid Shafi. They discuss their opinions on the ongoing Congress presidential elections and Prashant Kishore embarking on a Padyatra. On the Life Manifesto, Zarina narrates a story that advocates that stress and emotions are not to be controlled, but must be beautifully managed. And on the Filter Coffee podcast, Karthik is joined by Yashraj Akashi, Senior Ambassador of the TEDx program and Curator of TEDx Gateway. They discuss the origin story of TED and his franchise model. Guys, go to our website, ivmpodcast.com. You can check out the merch store. Also, links to all of our social media stuff, which is at IVM Podcast. Also, do check out our YouTube channels. We have a number of channels with many of your favorite shows available as full video podcasts. Finally, we'd like to thank our sponsors this week, Volvo XC40 Recharge, Bumble, Heads Up for Tails, and HDFC Mutual Fund. Thank you so much for making this possible.
Do you often find yourself surrounded by conversations about Web3, blockchain, NFTs, DAOs? What are these terms and how do they affect our future on the internet? So many questions, but don't worry, we've got answers to all your questions. Hi, I'm Eklavya Bhattacharya, and on our show, Future Proofing, we try to decode the impact of these future technologies on various industries with experts and tech enthusiasts. Tune into new episodes coming out every Thursday on the IVM Podcast app and the website, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Working Monday to Friday glued to your chair making you feel dull? Worry not. Get your 5-minute weekly dose of travel around the world with Postcards from Nowhere. Join me every Thursday as I explore the strange, obscure, and fascinating parts of the world and bring out facets of travel you may not have thought of before. You can find us on the IVM Podcast app, website, or wherever you get your podcast from.